Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the afternoon session. The title of today's session is Getting Back to Basics, a Strategic Plan for Supporting the Success of Your Students. My name is Christiana Russell. I'll be the session convener, and I'm just going to quickly introduce our speakers this afternoon. Our first speaker, I'm not sure exactly which order, but first I'd like to introduce Mr. Alec Lamont. He's the Senior Director of Wharton's Computing Customs Applications and Online Services Group, which is comprised of the Al West Learning Lab and the Customs Apps Development Team, the Web Cafe Group, and the Student Experience Team from University of Pennsylvania. Presenting along with him this afternoon is, is Becky Swagger, and she is the IT Director of Student Experience at the Wharton School. Previously, she was a member of Wharton's Computing Al West Learning Lab, working with peers and faculty to create web and rich internet applications for use in the classroom. I'd also like to remind everyone to please fill out your evaluations for the sessions, which are going to be online, and also not to forget that there will be recordings of the sessions that will be on sale, and you can find those at the registration desk. Let's welcome Becky and Alan.
Thank you very much. Welcome and thanks for joining us this afternoon. Can you hear me with the mic? Okay, great. So for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to tell you the story of Wharton Computing and how we got off track with our students, and then the plan that we implemented to try to get back on target. In doing so, we hope that you'll find this story will resonate with you and that you'll be able to leave with some tips and tricks and some ideas that you can implement back at your own institutions. I'd like to point out that this will not be a technical presentation, and none of the ideas that we have are particularly technical, nor are they particularly expensive or resource intensive. So I think it really is something that everyone can try at home. So, but before we get to that, There we go. A little bit about us. My name is Alec Lamond, Senior Director of the Custom Application and Online Services Group, also known as the Chaos Team. And it's comprised of our online courseware team, our custom development group, our Al West Learning Lab that builds games and simulations that are used in the classroom, and our student experience team. Becky Swagger, my colleague and co-presenter, is the IT Director of Student Experience, and we're going to tell you a little bit more about that position as the presentation continues. We both are liberal arts majors who somehow ended up in the field of technology. We're both web developers, and Becky is also an expert DBA and data mining expert. However, as I said, this will not be a technical presentation. We won't be talking about queries, stored procedures, or integrating your CMS with your LMS or anything like that. Most importantly, we're both water signs. So, picture, if you will, a large, well-resourced, well-staffed IT organization with a large major business school. And let's, for lack of a better word, call it Wharton Computing. Wharton Computing has a lot of touch points with its constituents. It supports the business, the research, and the teaching at the school, which translates into faculty, students, and staff. We have a lot of different groups that do a lot of different things for these constituents. We have a great public technology group, which supports over 500 public machines throughout our facilities. We have a core systems group, which handles infrastructure, email, servers, our SAN, all of that good stuff. We have a student support group that handles customer service. We have a whole bunch of developers that build everything from our student portal to competitive games and simulations. And we have a number of different groups that also do some more innovative things. So not just operational, but we have a lot of focus on bringing new things, technology-related things, to help support our faculty and staff and students. So we have the Al West Learning Lab that builds competitive games and simulations. And we have the Wharton Research Data Services Group, which we call WRDS, which sells access to financial data to over 260 institutions worldwide. So big, broad, well-resourced, well-staffed, and we think well-positioned to service the needs of our constituents, to support their success. And when we talk about supporting our constituents in this context, it's always about making sure they're successful. We're not talking about making them happy, okay? That's another organization, hopefully, within the school. It's not us, certainly not IT. So we think we're well positioned, and indeed from faculty and staff, we get good feedback. Okay, high performing, we seem to be hitting all the marks, and we all know the faculty are not shy about giving feedback, whether it's positive or negative. And so we think we're in a pretty good shape there with students as well. However, we need to think about students in a slightly different way. They're a transient population by nature. They're big, particularly at Wharton. We have 5,000 permanent students and additional 5,000 non-permanent students in our population. Hard to maintain close relationships with that group, hard to maintain close feedback loops with that group. So really hard to know what's going on there. Another couple things we need to think about with our student population: they're smart, they're competitive, they're driven, and they're also discerning customers and consumers of technology before they even get here, right? You can't just put out the new shiny thing and expect your students to actually think this is worthwhile. If it doesn't make a difference in the class or organizing their homework or whatever it happens to be, they're just going to shuffle it aside. In fact, I would argue that if you put out something without hard thought as to how it will actually work for your students or any other constituency, they might at first think it's good, but the actual drop, once they realize it doesn't do anything for them, you'll get a real bad drop in terms of their satisfaction. So it's a dangerous game to play. Another thing we need to think about with students is there's an arc to their time at your institution, right? They don't go out the way they come in. When they first show up in August, and this is an actual picture from this August preterm, they're pretty happy, they're pretty jazzed, they're pretty free, they're pretty open-minded. Okay, and they're not busy enough to ignore emails, workshops, surveys, et cetera, that your IT organization might be trying to send out. Okay, so they might read your emails and they might attend workshops. However, of course, by the end of the academic year, they're too busy to do all that. They've got lots of other things on their mind. Okay, they're not going to respond to your emails. They're not going to respond to your surveys necessarily, and they may not, even if they have feedback, good or bad, they just may not have the time to tell you what's going on. So you need to think about that when you're trying to keep track of your population. So Wharton Computing, well-resourced, well-staffed, doing lots of really cool and innovative things, keeping the buses running on time. We think we're in a great situation serving all three constituencies. Of course, are we really well positioned? In this picture, we're not the Roadrunner. Okay, we're Wile E. Coyote. Now, that's a pretty good bow he's on. Okay, it's a good bow he chose, but he's using it in the wrong way. And I think that we got into a position where we had all the right tools, we had all the right technology, well staffed, well resourced, but we were off the mark when it came to our student population. And the way we realize this is we have a stakeholder survey that comes out every year, and there was a downward trend over the last 3 or 4 years in our satisfaction ratings. Okay, now I've got a couple things to point out here. The stakeholder survey is not run by Wharton Computing. It's run by the academic departments. So we only get a handful of questions in this survey. So we don't get a big, deep dive into the data on what they might be feeling, but it is the only real measurement we have, so we have to go on it. Slow downward trend, we didn't realize it right away. Okay? It's kind of like the frog in the pot that doesn't realize he's cooked until he's cooked, right? We didn't see this coming because of this downward trend. And I think that it also made it hard to realize and identify what the actual cause of this problem was. Right? If we had put out something and then we had a major drop, in our satisfaction ratings, we could have probably tied it to something we had done over the course of the academic year much more easily than a slow kind of steady decline in these ratings. And another thing I want to point out is this is not down to disastrous levels. This is down to meh. This is down to students shrugging. Okay, but that's not enough for any of us, right? If we're working hard and our talented workers are putting out great applications and services, you want your students to be very satisfied. You don't want them to just be shrugging at all of that effort. So, downward trend, we finally realize it, and of course, we had to go through a little bit of organizational Sturm und Drang when this happened, because this is not what we want. We don't want our students to be just merely satisfied. We want them to be very satisfied. And so we went through some multiple stages of grieving. I think we definitely had anger. I remember that. I think we bargained a little bit. And when we finally got to acceptance, we did what any good IT organization would do. We asked for more data. Okay? So remember, the stakeholder survey that comes out every year, it's not ours. We only get a handful of questions. And I don't think I mentioned this, that comes out in March. And remember what I said about the arc of the student, right? March is kind of a bad time to be getting feedback from them, particularly for IT organizations. So we created our own survey. We put it out in December. It's a little bit earlier in that arc. And we came up with an incentive structure around print credit that allowed us to get as many responses as we could. And we got close to 40%, with over 500 students saying that they would like additional follow-up, so we could call or email them and get even more detail into what's going on, what are we doing wrong. So get a lot of data, and we know what to do with data. We can analyze it, identify patterns, and come up with a plan of attack. And so we did that, but then we realized, we looked around the room, and we realized there was no one in the organization that we could point to say, please go and fix this. We had lots of touch points within the organization with students, lots of independent groups who had different areas of responsibility when it came to serving the needs of the students, but not one person who could actually be responsible for the whole thing. So we decided that we were going to create one. Now, we already had one on the faculty side. We had a director-level position that was in charge of dealing with the faculty in terms of research and teaching. But the CIO had no one to turn to for students. So we decided we were going to create a position that was going to be equivalent to what we had on the faculty side. And there were a couple of things we thought about when we were creating this position. One, it had to be high enough level to have credibility both internally and externally. It had to be positioned properly within the organization in the sense that it shouldn't be attached to any particular team or project in order to avoid bias in the services we provide. And it also had to be not siloed off to the side. So it had to be positioned well within the right section of Wharton Computing, but not attached to a particular project. The other thing I want to point out is that this was not a net new position. Okay, this was 18 months ago. We weren't allowed to have net new positions. Liz, I'm sure most of you had the same thing back at home. We decided that this was important enough that we were going to take an open slot from another group and turn it into this position. So it was that important to us. So we came up with the IT Director of Student Experience. So it's high level enough for credibility. It's positioned with the Team Chaos within my group, which has a lot of touch points with students. But it's not attached to the courseware team. It's not attached to the custom applications team. Okay, it's independent, but yet within the overall group, so there could be influence across the teams, but not bias to a particular project or service. Once we'd figured that out, it was then, of course, time to hire. And we were lucky enough to have someone in the group already who fulfilled the skills for this position. And the couple things that I had in mind when we were doing this was had to have a lot of leadership skills, had to have very good communication skills to deal with both students and the technologists on the other side. So had to have the respect their peers in the technology level, but I'd also be able to turn around and talk to students in a way that isn't just technical jargon. Okay, and also had to have the ability to influence and lead and control rather than go around and be authoritarian or anything like that. Okay, and Becky fulfilled all of those things, and at this point I'm going to turn it over to her, and she's going to talk about the results and then the plan that we came up based on the survey results and we're currently implementing. So, Becky.
Thank you, Alec. Can everyone hear me? Great. So as Alec said, I took this position and, you know, I consider my job obviously to take this downward trend and try to reverse it a little bit, or at the very least create a culture where our students understand that Wharton Computing is a department of real people that they can come to when they have questions, ideas, problems, etc. So the first order of business was with a colleague, we went through the survey results that we had done to get the deep dive, as Alec said. We had a lot of free text information to go through, and that was really more informative than anything that was asked on a numerical scale. And when we combed through all these results, we came up with three high-level buckets of issues. First being signal to noise, which is getting our message out to students. It's clear we were not always successful. We have a lot of competition because everybody wants to talk to students, and as a result, they get inundated, and sometimes they don't hear anything. The second bucket is silos, and although that can sometimes be represented as a technical problem, it's more a symptom of how we're organized. And I myself was shocked to learn at dinner last night that the University of Pennsylvania has something like 12 to 14 CIOs alone. So you can imagine, with all of that decentralization and Penn and then down to the Wharton level and then down to our own project teams within Wharton Computing, sometimes we deliver a lot of projects that aren't integrated, and that creates confusion for students rather than helping them. And then finally, distance is just something we put up there because we could tell that students didn't know or didn't feel like they could come to us, and they didn't feel like we had a presence in their building. And so we would implement technology, distance ourselves behind the technology, and we weren't real people in their eyes. So the interesting thing about all of this is that these are not technical problems. I don't look at this and say, oh, if we only integrated a new ticketing system on our help desk, all of this would go away. So because the problems aren't technical, the solutions that we came up with also are not technical. And this is the three-pronged solution that Alec, I think, talked about. And really, in reality, this should be a Venn diagram, if I had to go over and do this slide again, because these areas actually intersect quite a bit. So we came up with outreach, integration, and image. And I'm going to talk about these things, but before I do, I just want to reiterate something that Alec said, which is, these aren't things that you need a lot of resources to do. They're not things you need a lot of money to do. They're just things that I feel our organization needs to focus on. And I'm going to start with outreach because in some ways that's the hardest, right? Outreach is getting your message to students. And I can tell that we're not successful there because they're very busy. And when I read through the survey results, I constantly read comments like, we want to print from our public, you know, we want to print from our laptops to the public computers. We want to reserve study rooms from our mobile devices. And they can already do these things, but they don't know they can do them. So then why are we wasting developer resources implementing systems and then not telling students that the systems are out there? It's very difficult. So we thought about what we could do this year, maybe a little bit differently, to let people know what we had. And as Alex said, our best touch point for students is at the beginning of the year when they first come to campus. And it may be different in your organization, but I think the main takeaway is you have to figure out when your own best time is to get a message out to students and then just milk it for all it's worth. In our case, we have August when our MBAs come. They have a whole month of orientation before classes start. And then we have the first few weeks of classes. And after that, people's perceptions of the services available to them are pretty much set. So our goal was to sort of do a blitzkrieg during the orientation period, get as much FaceTime as we could with our students, and we decided we should try to message them even before they ever step foot on campus. So no distractions from a new setting, no distractions from trying to meet people. It finally occurred to us this year that we're IT and we actually do control their email. So the first message they ever got at their brand shiny new Wharton account was from us. It was from Wharton Computing, and it was a very nice, we're glad you're here, we're looking forward to meeting you, and here's some things we think you should know about technology at the Wharton School. Very easy. The next thing we realized that we had to do was target our messages a little bit more. We don't get a lot of designated face time with students. So in previous years, we'd get maybe an hour to speak at orientation when they're already getting a lot of information. And so being technologists, we thought we would make really good use of this hour by cramming it full of as much data as we possibly could. So welcome to Wharton. Here's the 90 wonderful services we offer you. And I'm not sure they retained any of that. So this year, I consulted with some students from previous years and asked them, you know, what do you wish you had known the first week you were at Wharton? I talked to our student support office about questions that they get repeatedly from new students. And using this information, we developed a sort of, here's the top five things you really need to know to hit the ground running when you come to Wharton. And, you know, and unfortunately, it's not necessarily the five things we like to talk about. It's not our simulations. It's not our sexy projects. It's really basic stuff, like how to get on the wireless network, how to print, where your course materials are. But we combed it down to these top five things. And then the next thing we did was we realized our messages have to be shorter. So we took the top five things and we made them as short as possible. Yes, they want to know how to print from their laptop, but you cannot send an email that explains all your print cues in details and with very detailed instructions on how to install these cues onto the laptop. Nobody will read that. Big blocks of text are very scary to people. So if you have to provide supporting information to your message, that's fine. But I think it's best to take that and put it somewhere else, maybe link to it, and just try to keep the message to a minimum. If you can fit your message in the subject line of an email, that's even better because they might not open the email. So we were targeted, we were short, and then finally we decided to take that consistent, targeted, short message and blast it out to as many channels as we could. So I gave a session during orientation of the top five things. We put them on our student portal. That formed the basis of the Welcome to Wharton letter that our CIO wrote. That in turn got recycled into a journal article published by one of our student organizations. And then I think we put it on our blog and put up some signs. But because it was consistent and short and we put it out on many channels, I'm hoping that we reached a lot more people with the information that they need to know this year than we have done that in previous years. And so that's great. The many channels that we were able to use are great, but the problem with that is it's only one part of the outreach effort because it covers us messaging the students, but what it doesn't cover is the students in turn giving their feedback to us. And to make sure we had that covered, we instituted a few new channels. So starting last year, we decided that we would try to work with student-elected IT representatives. So these are people who are elected from the student body by their peers to be a technology resource for the duration of their tenure at Wharton. And we're very lucky. Our students are already sort of organized into cohorts, and these cohorts already have elected representatives for other things like academics. So we just sort of injected ourselves into that process. But it makes sense because technology is a big part of what they need to do, and they should have a peer resource that they can go to because not everybody is going to want to come to IT and talk to IT about problems that they're having. And so now I have 24 people. I email them once a week with some kind of IT thing I think they should know based on what they're telling me or based on what the support desk is telling me. It allows us to take that messaging that we did at the beginning of the year and extend it throughout the year in a more timely basis. So now we gave them the top five things in August, but as the year continues, we can make sure we're messaging in context. So for example, when we're getting into the recruiting period, we could probably send out an IT tip for the week that says something about our career management website that we think they should know. And the added bonus is because the messages are coming from their peers and not from us, they're far more likely to read them. So we're sending fewer messages through a better channel, and I'm hoping that we're going to get through to more people this year. The other thing is that this mechanism allows us to get the feedback back. So I have yet to send out an email to people and not get replies completely unrelated to what I've discussed. Questions that people have, and that's very valuable to me. I already have a whole bucket full of projects that have been suggested. That's just from sending the emails out once a week. So I think this is a very valuable mechanism. The other channel that we use, it's a new channel, but it's the old channel, good old face-to-face. And this is, we have a support office, and they're very good at what they do, but their job is to sit in an office and let students come to them. What we didn't have was a mechanism to go out and do a little more proactive outreach. So we took advantage of that period in the beginning of the year, the preterm and the first 2 weeks of classes or so, and we tried to go out and talk to as many students as we could. And, you know, you can see here we have the dorky shirts, and, you know, I hate corporate shirts, but they were actually very effective. You know, we wore them, And every time you're walking around the building in a shirt and a student asks you a question, that's an opportunity to educate. The top five, keeping in mind the top five. So, you know, Alec was walking around the building and one of the printers was broken and a student came up and asked him to fix it. And, you know, Alec's great, but he can't fix printers. But what he can do is take that opportunity to say, I'm going to call the support office on your behalf. And just so you know, if this ever happens again, their phone number is posted on the wall right here. So anytime you're in the lab and something goes wrong, here's the number to call. So that's one more person who knows what to do when something breaks in our computer labs. The other sort of technique, and this is a time-honored tradition, is bribing students with food. That's why I have the little arrow there to our snack bucket. So during the first few weeks of classes, we just rolled a table into a very high traffic area of our building, and we just stood there with our food. And eventually students came over to us, and we took that opportunity to say, you know, how is technology working here for you? And the responses that we got back were fascinating and disturbing. You know, someone asked me to clear his browser cache. He needed to know how to do that because his wife didn't like the websites he was going to. But mostly the feedback was, I mean, I didn't even want to touch that guy's computer. But I did, because that's my job. So we got a lot of interesting feedback. And I would say those 2 weeks of getting out there and talking to students has made me feel very confident that my short-term project list is going to address most of the pain points. I know what the pain points are. I know where our documentation is weak. I know what's confusing to people. And that's something, if I had spent an entire year up in my office, I'm not sure I would have as good of a handle on it as I do from 2 weeks just standing at a table in front of students. The other part of getting out there, if you're not going in a formal outreach capacity, is just really to leave the office and put yourself in the role of the student. And I'm going to say an example, and it has nothing to do with technology or higher education. It goes back to a trip that my husband and I took down the shore, as we say in Philly, earlier this summer. And we were going to this really great bed and breakfast. It was very luxurious and high-end, and it was new, and we were excited to try it. So we got into our room, and it was, I mean, it was immaculate, and clearly a lot of thought had gone into the design of the room, and they had the iPod dock, and it was very clean, and we really enjoyed it until we went to bed, and I realized there was no lamp on the bedside table. So if you wanted to read in bed, you had to turn on the overhead light, and then when you were done, get out of bed and turn the light off. And now, this is a first world problem, right? This is no big deal, but it speaks to some, I think, a trap that we all fall into, right? This hotel had spent so much time and so much money refurbishing their property, and yet no one from the hotel had actually put themselves in the shoes of a guest and tried to use the room in that capacity. I think had they done that, they would have seen very quickly that they needed to have a lamp on the bedside table. I don't think they omitted it purposefully. I don't think they just ran up against the budget and said, oh, you know, we're out of money, no lamp. I think that's something they would have put there. And it's something that I see in our organization. I think we spend a lot of time deploying 500 public computers to the labs. They're new computers, they're great, and they're shiny. But I don't think we do this enough, as in going over to the lab, logging in with a student account, not your account with elevated privileges, logging in with a student account and doing work. And I did a lot of this presentation over in the lab just to see how things are working, because why should we waste the resources of deploying these new machines and then miss the little things that we could do to make the experience better for the students? So that's my outreach soapbox. Moving on to integration. Again, this is something that manifests itself technically, but really is just, I believe, an organizational symptom. And what I'm talking about is a lack of integration between things that students have to use. So we have a tendency to put up a lot of websites, and students have to go to them one by one. And what they really need is more of an ecosystem. And I like stories, so I'll tell another story. This is this is actually a line for the Sistine Chapel, but it's reminiscent of a few years ago, the way our students got their course packs. So they would go to the copy shop, and they would wait in line, and they would pay, and then they would pick up this big stack of paper, and they'd have their course packs for the semester. And we had a new dean, and he was walking through the building, unfortunately at a time when this line was very big, and he was appalled. He said, why would we have this kind of line? This is ridiculous. And he said, make this go away. And I agree. In the year 2010, when students could buy a taco on their cell phone, there's no reason they should have to stand in a line to pick up a pile of dead trees. So we said, great, you know, you're right, we're going to fix this. And we partnered with a study, study.net, and they're a vendor who specializes in electronic course packs. And they also have the added advantage of taking care of the copyright on our behalf. So they clear all the copyright for us, they handle the payments, we don't have to do any of that anymore, and then students can just log in, buy their course pack, it's in a PDF format, they can put it on their reader, they can print it, it's a lot more flexible for them, and they don't have to wait in line. So we were very excited. In the fall of 2009, we rolled this out. There was no line in front of our Reprographics, that's our copy shop, and so we thought things were great. And then that stakeholder survey came out again in the spring, had a few questions about study.net on it.
Survey said.
Oh. Yeah. So it was not really well received, and we didn't understand why, because every piece of that project was done correctly and on time. Our Reprographics copy shop got everything into electronic format. Our faculty delivered their materials on time. IT sent information from our registration system over to study.net. Study.net organized everything and helped us get live by the time the students came back. So what happened? Well, a couple things. I think the first thing is that we have courseware at Wharton that students use to get their class slides, to get their assignments, and that's always been there. And when we went to this electronic course pack system, that's a different website. So now they have our courseware and they have study.net. So things are in two places instead of in one place. And that was very confusing. And not only were they in two places, the places weren't being used consistently between classes. Because some faculty they put all of their slides on study.net in addition to their copyrighted material. Some faculty didn't want to use study.net because they didn't want their students to have to pay. So it was very confusing for people. And another thing that happened was the price of the course packs went up. Well, the price of the course packs went up because we're now complying with copyright law in a better way. And as a university, we feel good about that. That's the right thing to do, and that's what we want to do. But we didn't tell that to the students. So they came back to school. They have a new system for course packs, and all of a sudden, the prices are higher. So naturally, they attributed the higher prices to the implementation of this system. So that didn't do anything helpful for their feedback on the system. But I think the most important thing that went wrong to note is here. So yes, we erased the line. The line is gone. But whatever you want to say about waiting in a line, and it is annoying, it's actually a very simple process. I mean, you have to stand there, but you know, at the end of your time standing in line, you do have your course pack and you're ready to go. We replaced the line with this. So they log in to Wharton's courseware, and they have to click the course materials link, and then they have to log into study.net and search for their materials, and they buy their materials, and they can download them, but they have to download the files one at a time. If their course pack has more than one file in it, they're doing that separately. And at that point, if they just want an electronic copy, they're finished. If they want the hard copy like they had before, they need to print it out themselves at one of our self-service public printers, and they need to collate it, which is difficult because the files are downloaded in alphabetical order, not in chronological order. So now they have to shuffle through paper to figure out, you know, what piece of the course pack they're supposed to be reading for what class. So from the student perspective, even though everything on the project was done correctly, this is not an improvement. It's not an improvement because it's not an ecosystem. It's just a collection of disparate parts. And, you know, the whole really does not equal the sum of its parts. And in fact, in this case, the whole was less than the sum of its parts. So what we really need is, you know, an ecosystem for students. And even if all of the services are separate, you know, and that's a reality, they really need to be integrated together. So this year, we did work with our vendor. They streamlined the download process. They now recognize Wharton single sign-on. And they developed an API for us to use so we can provide a more direct route from our student portal and our courseware into their system. The other thing we did this summer is we tried to do outreach to the faculty, and we worked with Reprographics to make sure that everybody was putting their materials in a consistent place. I mean, yes, they're in two places, and yes, that's confusing, but we can at least try to make it consistent between classes so students know what to do. And in fact, this was one of our top five messages when the students came in this year. We spoke about courseware and what the study.net is and why they have to pay for their downloads. So I'm hoping that will help when we have a survey this spring about their electronic course packs. And so finally, I want to talk about image. This is hard because it's not necessarily a logical thing, and I think a lot of technologists tend to ignore this. But what I'm talking about is people's perception of an IT organization and their perception of the services we deliver. So, and now we have to get out of the realm of data. There's no data. We haven't done a study. It's a little disconcerting for a lot of people. So students come up to us and they say, we would like you to deploy Macs in the computer labs. And they come up to us and they say, we would like you to install Firefox in the computer labs. And our question back to them is, well, you know, given that we'd probably disable the add-ons, what could you do in Firefox that you can't do in IE? What can you do on the Macintosh that you can't do on the PCs that we already have out there, assuming, you know, that the software is equal? And the answer to the question is nothing. There's really nothing they couldn't do, you know, on the PC that they want to do on the Mac. But that's actually the wrong question, because those questions are about products, right, not about experience. And I think we ignore the experience at our peril, and we spend a lot of time, which is deploying products, which is ultimately wasted if we don't consider the whole experience. And I think, you know, IT and technologists have been moving in this direction for quite some time, especially on the consumer side, but it's time for universities to catch up and recognize this. So I'm going to give an example of something, and no offense to anyone in the room, Dave, but so our labs group deployed 2 weeks ago Skype stations, which sounds really cool. And they're actually just a reuse of these old phone booths that nobody uses. So they deployed a few PCs there and put in some audio so students could go Skype, which could be useful because we have a very large international student population. So I was excited, and I went over there to Skype, and I couldn't find the headphone jack. And actually, it was in the hard drive that was mounted under the shelf. So by using my iPod as a flashlight, I then crawled under there and figured out where I had to plug in the headphones. So are students going to do this? Are they going to have a positive response to this? You know, they might, but probably most of them won't even find out where the jack is to plug in the headphones. So, you know, while part of me feels like such a pain in the ass for going back to the labs group and saying, hey, you've got to move this jack, the reality is I just don't want to see their hard work wasted over something so small and fixable like a headphone jack. I mean, I think it's incumbent upon us to recognize that there's a whole experience involved here, and I don't want to squander the investment that we've already made into our products. And so finally, I'm going to talk about, as part of the image, the importance of having a voice. And I'm going to quote a blogger, Fred Wilson. He writes a great venture capital blog, Wharton grad, and he invests a lot in technology. And he had a post up a couple months ago that really resonated with me, and in which he said that software is the media. And what he meant by that is that software is no longer the wrapper around your message. It's no longer the wrapper around the media. The software itself conveys its own messages, and it needs to have a voice. And I think I agree with that, and I would take that even further and say that not only does software need to have a voice, but everything that you do as an organization needs to have a voice, and IT itself needs to have a voice. We need to be more than just error messages and downtime messages. We need to project ourselves to students in a way that says, you know, we're willing to experiment on your behalf, we're willing to hear your ideas, because if we don't do that, then why are we spending all this money to develop product? So with that, I almost forgot the dude, right? The image really ties the room together. If you don't have image, if people don't, and you know, it's not true what your mom said. She said it's what's on the inside that counts. It's, yes, what's on the inside counts. And none of us like to think that looks matter, but they kind of do. And we need to be cognizant of what we're projecting out to our students. And I would say, you know, we have great people, as Alec pointed out, to develop our systems. We're blessed with a lot of resources and wonderful infrastructure, but we need that image and voice and experience to tie it all together and deliver something good for our students. So that said, I'm going to turn things back over to Alec, and he is going to recap and take questions.
So, yeah, I think a lot of what Becky talked about, it's crucial when you're spending so much time and effort to create applications, services to support the success of your students, to not keep these things in mind when you do that. As she said, you really do so at your peril, and you're wasting an opportunity to really capture your students, kind of captivate them in many ways, And it does take away from actually a lot of the effort that you've done on the technical side if you ignore some of these things. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to questions. Any reactions? Anyone doing anything similar back home? Any questions at all? Ready? Yes. Course packet? It's simply, it's the readings that you might have for a particular course.
Well, I mean, we probably don't have the word out as much as we should, but for the students who do know about it, they've been very receptive. And this is in terms of the IT cohort reps that I've been working with. And we have actually student startups now coming to us and wanting to partner with us in some of the services that we deliver. And I think they recognize that they can do that. So I don't know if they're enthused about the title itself, but I think there's been a positive response and a recognition that there's a culture shift and we're now more approachable as an organization. So maybe next year we can have even more data to report on that.
Yeah, well, I think every IT organization has that problem, big or small, and we're constantly, we have a lot of resources, but we certainly can't do everything. We do have to try and focus in on the ones that make the most sense. And a lot of it is just prioritizing due to pain points, certainly on the student side. In the aggregate, you don't want to just take one or two students saying something. You need to look for ones where there's a large majority of students saying something about a particular service or product and then maybe try and attack that.
Yeah. And I would say also that when I went through our detailed data, the colleague that I worked with has a psychology background and she's a big systems thinker. So we didn't necessarily approach it from what can we implement technology-wise to help the situation. That's how we came up with the three buckets. And I think if somebody says, I don't like the mobile website, and what is that really? What don't they like about it? What does it really mean? And that's a great example because we had a lot of feedback like that. And what they meant was it didn't work well on touch screens. So we were actually able to just update our style sheets, and we've had a really positive response to our new mobile site. And in reality, it does nothing now than it didn't do last year. People just like it more. So I try not to think of it in terms of technology. I try to think holistically about what are they really saying? Like, what's the actual problem? And I think if you can demonstrate that you're willing to do some low-hanging fruit, then they're more receptive to the argument that, you know, we may not be able to do this right now, but we appreciate your feedback.
Any other questions? Comments?
Some of the things that I spoke about, anyone can do this. Rolling off that table with food was the best. To me, that was the most illuminating thing I've ever done in my career to understand what's really going on with students. Going out into the computer labs, if you can't buy your own shirts, you can have name tags or some identifying way to brand yourselves and just let students know you're out there. And sometimes we just put up signs. I know it sounds hokey, but when a student came and said, I don't understand why we don't have a mobile website, the next time I was out, I put up a sign that said, did you know we have a mobile website? I don't know. And people came up and they said, is that true? And I said, yes. So don't underestimate the little things you can do. Signs, food.
Yeah, and being out there with the logo shirt, from personal experience I know, even walking through during when classes break and there's hundreds of people flitting by you, people will stop and say, oh, wait, you're with technology. And they'll have a question or a comment or something. And if you can't figure it out, you can get their email and respond to them later. And suddenly you've made a connection there. Yeah. And they'll remember that.
Yeah, just by being there, even if you're not actively doing anything, gives the perception that, you're approachable and you care about their success. Would you want to answer that?
Why don't you try?
Okay. Well, so we do actually have someone who's responsible for Wharton social media, and he does not work for Wharton Computing. So he's an alumni of Wharton Computing, so a friend. So we, through him, we sometimes message students And no, there are no channels we've been told to stay away from. We wouldn't listen to that anyway. We would just go out and do it.
Right. We haven't actually used YouTube. The one idea we did think about was trying to encourage students to do short clips on YouTube about how to use technology for their peers. Because if we go on and do it, it's not going to be any more effective than an email. But if we get them to do it, then suddenly there could be something interesting there. But we haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah. We started a blog, though.
Okay, yes. Well, thank you very
much
for your time.